committee and note that Senator Rohde and Senator Kelly are in hand. We have, first of all, before Senate Bill 259, this bill was introduced last year, has a referral from here to Labor and Management. I understand that there was a similar bill under consideration in the House, and I've gone through all of the bills, trying to schedule them throughout the month. There's not a great deal of pressure for this bill. It does seem reasonable, however, and so I've brought it forward for consideration. I do haven't had any letters or particular background on it. It seems a fairly straightforward bill in that it allows for more than one historical district within an area, and I think this related back to a situation Haynes had at one time. Chip Dinnerline, the new head of the Division of Parks for Department of Natural Resources, is here. Chip, do you have any information for us?
Yes,
I do. Could you come up and identify yourself for the record? And does that bother you, having the son come in?
Well, I don't know. It makes it a little hard to read.
All right. I don't know how
we can solve it very quickly by putting shades down. Something in the Senate, and we've been doing this a great deal of rapidity. Board leader.
For the record, note that Senator Stimson is on hand. Go ahead.
Okay. For the record, my name is Chip Dinnerline, and I'm the director of State Parks. Within state parks, we have a section on history and archaeology, and the chief of my section on history and archaeology is Mr. Bill Hannibal, who's also the state historic preservation officer. The present program is historic district program is coordinated through that section and through the Historic Sites Advisory Committee for the state. I have, Chairman, a background, a little bit of background that I can hand out to the committee just to review at your disposal on how historic sites are, how historic districts come about. And this is the law that's in place at the present time. Senate Bill 259 would expand upon the present legislation, and from our perspective in state parks, we would recommend support of the bill and an amendment, and I'll justify both of those. In terms of support of the bill, 259 would allow municipalities to establish more than one historic district within their boundaries. This approach is really logical and appropriate. Many of the jurisdictions, such as Juneau, for instance, have non-contiguous areas, such as the Gold Creek Basin or South Franklin Street, which are appropriate districts, and the suggested amendment would allow a municipality to nominate and recognize such areas in sense of several blocks or a block within the city rather than a huge blanket district. The other thing that the bill would do, of course, would raise the limit of the loan available for buildings from $100,000 to $250,000. And that's also appropriate because it's our experience that rehabilitation of commercial structures, such as the Alaska Hotel or the Bergman Hotel in Juneau, the Golden North Hotel in Skagway, or the Sourdough Lodge up in Gulcana, may range from several hundred thousand to over $1 million. So in terms of the amount of loan available from the state monies to match federal monies on some of these properties, it's much more realistic. Those two factors combined would, I think, accomplish more accurately the purpose of the original legislation, which would allow communities to kind of rehabilitate downtown areas, including commercial buildings, in a historical manner. The amendment we'd like to suggest is that the bill be amended to allow the Historic Sites Advisory Committee to act as the historic district a governing body in the unorganized borough. The reason we suggest this amendment is that current applications for historic loans show that about somewhere between 15% and 20% of applications for federal matching funds come from owners of properties that are located outside of the organized borough. And owners of these properties in the unorganized borough often have a difficult time in obtaining non-federal funds. The properties may be on the historic register, National Register of Historic Places. They may be eligible for funds, but the owners have a difficulty obtaining the match because of the remote locations involved. This bill, if the Historic Sites Advisory Committee could designate for state purposes, act as in lieu of a governing body in the unorganized borough, the owners of the properties would be able to apply for business loans and receive some state loan money to match the federal money. And there's some fairly important properties in this regard. Examples would be Kennecott, McCarthy, Flat, up at Circle, Arctic Village, some of the communities up at the buildings up at Teller. These are all areas right now which cannot be designated as districts under the state statute. In terms of fiscal implications, I'd just say that we don't see any great need to increase any appropriations in the budget under the present bill. The only thing that we might see is an increase in applications due to a more realistic funding limit for the loans. The amendment, if the committee decides to accept our amendment, to consider our amendment, the one change we would make to our 81 budget request would be about $6,000 to the Historic Sites Advisory Committee. And this would just allow them one additional meeting somewhere to consider the properties in the unorganized borough that might be suggested for historic districts. But those would be the only fiscal implications that we would see with it.
Are there questions of Mr. Dennehy?
Senator?
Sure. What specifically is your recommended amendment then?
We would specifically recommend that the amendment to permit the State Historic Sites Advisory Committee, as established by AS 4135-110, to act as the Historic District Commission for the unorganized borough.
Where does that wording go?
Senator Rooney.
If I could raise one question as we're discussing it. I assume that would have to go in, that would be a new section, Senator Stimson, and be Section 3 then, and then would be language in Section 3. The committee has been undertaking efforts in the unorganized borough, and I guess a question to the chairman, would this have any impact on the studies, the hearings, and the efforts that the committee is undertaking?
Senator Roy, that raises a good point for Senator Stimson. I would like to have the wording and consider it. I think we would have an opportunity, if it has merit, to possibly add it to the bills that we have under consideration. Part of what we're talking about takes a local body to, since it's under Title 29, for municipalities to recognize. What we're getting here is a mechanism, both I assume, to recognize in areas that have no local government, so there's an additional problem, plus making it available for a loan. So I would appreciate this being brought to the committee, and we could, if that's the pleasure of the committee, hold this for that action. I would prefer, however, to have the wording and take a look at it in connection with the other bills that we have.
Madam Chairman, Chip, the one problem I see with the with the wording, and I worked with Senator Sackett on matters for Eagle, for example, and I think that he might be a little bit cautious about it, and certainly if there's financial implications, it'll go to Finance Committee and may well be undone there. I think it's important to get the expression from some of the rural members to how they feel about the commission. I have no personal problem with it, but quite frankly, I'm willing to follow the lead of those people who represent the areas that will be impacted by it. I think you can understand my position on that. It's a very, very touchy problem, quite frankly.
Absolutely. We don't, of course, have any problem with that at all. We would intend to work with, the Historic Sites Advisory Committee would work with local groups in the area that they would consider a district. Our main aim in this is to just point out to the committee that some of the historic areas that we think of such as McCarthy and the Kennecott areas aren't eligible right now for the kind of state assistance that might help them gain federal match. They are available for federal match money, but it's awful hard for them to come up with any other private funding because of the remote location.
When does your historic sites group next meet? Do you know?
I'm not sure the last date. They just met recently in Ketchikan, and I'm not sure their next meeting. But I can find out and get back to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, it might be good to run that by them. And I also might point out that we do not have an appropriations bill here, so it would take a separate bill. And I would suggest that it more appropriately might come through the finance committee for that, for adding to that if they're short funded.
They're adequately funded now. If and we don't see any fiscal implication in the bill as drafted, which we support.
I see.
The amendment that we just suggested for consideration, if the committee would decide that amendment has merit, then at our budget hearings we would only suggest an increase to the committee by the enabling them to have one additional meeting a year to focus on the unorganized borough. Other than that, we don't see a fiscal implication.
Fine, thank you. Senator Stimson, do you wish to pursue that at this time?
I just am having a lot of trouble following the recommended amendment, you know, without the wording. Would you mind repeating it for me one more time?
Sure. And it is, we would suggest that the State Historic Advisory Committee shall be authorized, as established by AS 41-35-110, shall be authorized to act as the Historic District Commission within the unorganized borough.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Senator, are there questions on the bill? Would anyone be prepared to make a motion on the bill?
Madam Chairman, I would move we pass the bill from committee with individual recommendations.
Is there discussion? Any objection? Any objection? All right. Well, I will. I intend to have a due pass on that, and we'll send it around, and it would go forward to labor and management. And I don't know the context of that second referral, but I would like to assure the committee that I would work with you to get your wording, and we will take a look at it in connection with the study that's been done and the legislation we have before us. And it might be, if at all possible, good to run that by the your advisory commission to get their input on it too.
Will you adopt the amendment, or
do you? No, it was just discussion. I think it needs to be looked at in connection with what we're doing.
I thought that might be the opinion of the chair. I haven't seen much come back from labor and management.
No, I don't understand.
I understand.
Yeah. I mean, I don't understand why this bill's going here. I think it's a good bill.
I'd understand it better if it was referred there today.
Mm-hmm.
I would understand it better if it had been referred there today.
Okay. The next item we'd set for a public hearing, Senate Bill 342, which was introduced by the Rules Committee by request of the governor. And I also made note both yesterday and today that I wanted to bring up, because it's intimately tied with this bill, an increase in state participation for municipal sewer and water facilities and additional state participation in solid waste resource recovery systems. A bill speaking to that issue was read across this morning in the form of Senate Bill 436, and the sponsor is Senator Curtula. We had last year before us a bill by Senator Curtula, and a public hearing was held. That was Senate Bill 131. that spoke to both a bond issue and an increase in state participation for sewer and water. At that time, the bill was not sent forward because we can, of course, get the bond issue only every 2 years. It's timely this year, and we do have a program by the administration for it. I would like today, if we could explore these, Commissioner Mueller is here from the Department of Environmental Conservation, and also Jenny Chitwood from Alaska Municipal League, just to talk about what's in the bills, and then, depending on how the committee feels, to come back on Thursday, either for additional testimony or possible action on the bills. So today, if we can look at it just as a presentation, I think it will be helpful. And we also have a representative here from Senator Petula's office. I wonder, Ernie, if you could come up and talk about both of the matters before us, and then I'm sure there'll be questions on the part of the committee.
I'll be on mine. Keith Calvin from our department, he's the chief of our facilities construction and operations section, is here, and he's the one that knows about.
Keith, would you like to join the commissioner?
Works.
And what, could you give us the last name one more time for the record?
Keith Kelton.
Kelton, fine.
And for the record, I'm Ernie Muller, Commissioner of Environmental Conservation. I guess we're really talking about three bills. I presume that you're also considering the bond bill, Senate Bill 342.
We have 342 and the new bill, which is 436. The one we considered last year was Senate Bill 131. If that title is used, it of course would need substantial committee substitute in order to consider. So I think that the issues raised in 342 and 436 get at the real matter before us.
Okay. 342, of course, is the bond proposition proposal which the governor sends, or has sent in the last, since I've been here, every 2 years to the legislature to provide funds for municipal water and sewer systems. And we've got with us a package of information on that program for each member of the committee.
Sure.
Probably means that I won't have one, but. I think most of you are familiar with this program. In a general way, it provides up to 50% of the non-federal share of water and sewer facilities which are constructed by organized municipalities. Actually, there's another program in the bond bill, and that is the Village Safe Water Program, which provides up to 100% of the construction in certain types of rural villages. The legislation, Village Safe Water Act, specifies what type of rural village would be eligible for.
Commissioner, I might stop you, just say that the members do have before them from your Department of Environmental Conservation booklet, where you touch all your programs, a copy of both the Water and Sewer Construction Grant Program and the Village Safe Water Act. So
good.
We do have some background on that.
Anyway, I think we're essentially asking this year for continuation of both of those programs. For a bond bill of about $2.5 million for the Village Safe Water Program and $23 million for the Municipal Water and Sewer Construction Grant Program. We'd be happy to answer any questions about our ongoing program. And Keith is here to do exactly that if there aren't any.
I think it needs to be pointed out that if we do take any action on the other proposal, which increases the funding, obviously it's going to have an impact on the amount of dollars that are set forth in this proposal. It might be a little bit helpful as to how how precise is the figure that you have in the bond issue, and how do you go about knowing if that's an accurate figure? What happens if this is passed, as far as, do you wait until requests are made for municipal projects to draw against
that
fund?
Probably explain that better.
Okay, our only way of projecting our needs is to look at the past history. At the capital budget submittal, which is in your package, describes how we go about that. But basically the reason for it is, since it is a community system program, we only supply a grant for it. The project is determined to be necessary by a municipality, and they contact us for funding. We do not do anything to try to set it up ahead of time. It's impossible for us to get an accurate projection by the community, since their needs change from month to month, week to week, and their priorities and political problems tend to move projects in and out too fast for us to do that. So what we've done, we've gone back for the last 3 years and looked at our obligation rates and come up with an average rate per month and projected that forward, adding inflation to the cost of those projects, and projected we need about $1 million a month to continue the program at the present level. I might add, this same projection was used 2 years ago for the bond fund, and it's hit it right on the head. And we projected that 2 years ago that we need $24 million for this next bond issue, and it turns out we need $23 million, so it's a very close projection using historic data. I have no idea, really, how much money that we'll need for a solid waste program to add that to this bill. It's an estimate that it might be $8 to $10 million, but that's just from looking at some of the needs that we know of in the state and talking to some of the city managers. It's going to take them a while to gear up and get local money to match it. So it's really hard to say the first 2 years how much they would need in the solid waste.
Although some municipalities have projects that they're considering now to be moved fairly early on in the process, if the state didn't think
I'd like to have, for the committee's sake and for mine, if you could give us an overview. It's contained in Senate Bill 436, but also the, you know, I think you've been working with the draft, as to just what would happen to the various formulas and what would happen with the addition of section on the resource recovery and also solid waste.
Okay, perhaps I'll give you some background. Some time ago, in fact, it started before the last Municipal League meeting. The Alaska Municipal League, of which the department is an associate member, I believe the name is, mm-hmm. Was involved in their annual review of what they would like to see for policy statements, and they asked us to come to discuss the possibility of developing a construction grant program for solid waste facilities. Legislatures considered bills along that direction for about the last 8 or 9 years, and nothing really has happened with them. We are strongly in support of additional funding for municipalities for these kinds of capital projects for a number of reasons. First of all, many municipalities 10 or 15 years ago felt the first priority needs were for water supply and waste disposal systems. We've had a state grant program in those areas for about the last 11 years, and many of those needs are being taken care of. The next priority from our standpoint are to protect the public health and environmental implications of which we're concerned is to improve solid waste disposal. Mm-hmm. Many communities in Alaska are faced with serious solid waste disposal problems. And so we feel that the only way to really approach that system is to do it on a sharing basis, where the state and the local government get together and join financial forces, so to speak, to solve that particular problem. The state of Washington's had a solid waste construction grant program for a number of years, and it's worked quite well. So we're strongly in support of this legislation. I've talked to the governor about it. I've talked to the governor's legislative assistant about it. I think they're both understand the kinds of problems that the communities of Alaska have with solid waste. And this would be a way to help solve them. We also propose that it be folded right into our existing water supply and waste disposal construction grant program, rather than forming a separate bureaucracy and system to handle essentially the same program. it was, I guess it was Perry Lovett and city manager Cordova or someone who suggested that perhaps an incentive should be included on those facilities which are essentially resource recovery facilities. And I can give you some ideas about what they are that exist in Alaska today. Many of you know that Anchorage has a large shredder which is capable of reducing solid waste into a form that's more easily transported and recycled. Fairbanks has the largest trash compactor in Alaska, it's called the Baler. It's able to take two medium-sized sedans and crush them together in one block and ship them to Seattle for to be recycled into new automobiles or whatever. And they found that that system is economical for them. They are able to drop, pick up the automobiles, crush them into a bale, send them south, and make money on the deal, or at least break even. And I think that that's a very practical way to solve a very serious problem in Alaska, and that is the ultimate disposal of bulky waste. So we see our communities moving along this direction, and we'd like to help them do that. I think more and more communities would be interested if there were some state money.
A couple of questions. Under the first section of this bill, 4603030B, we're talking about going from 50% basically to 75% by either state or state federal participation. We're actually increasing the amount of the formula.
Not in my copy of the bill.
Yes, it is. The wording is changed.
You've changed it?
No, this is the same as was out the other day. But the effect of that, as I understand, in Section B, does increase that percentage. Jenny?
I don't think that the wording in 436 does, but the municipality that the wording be changed to change from 50% to 75%.
Well, what is the effect of the change here, where we take out the lesser of and the eligible costs?
I think that's just cleanup.
That's strictly cleanup and does not speak then to any change. So, 030B would be just remain or retain the current level of funding then. Okay.
Now, you want me to carry on and discuss a little bit the provisions of the bill?
Okay, that would be helpful.
One of the suggestions we had was to also include, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, all in one bond bill, one fund, mm-hmm. for water supply, sewage disposal, and solid waste facilities, so we wouldn't be faced with a proliferating number of bond issues. So we suggested there be a single fund, and that is why C simply amends Section 2 of the proposed bill, simply amends the current language to add solid waste facilities.
Okay.
D rewrites the definition of, rewrites the definition of eligible costs a little bit in order to be broad enough to encompass all the types of facilities we have. Section 4 speaks specifically to solid waste, both the eligibility for the 50% share and increase to 60% for resource recovery type facilities. Section 5 defines what resource recovery and solid waste disposal facilities are. In the sense of those three definitions, referring back to the eligible costs, tries to set the parameters of what types of facilities would be eligible for this funding. It's our proposal, for example, to fund transfer stations under this program, but not garbage trucks.
Question. Yes,
go ahead.
Ernie, there's a transfer station being in the works up for Eagle River. Right now, are we eligible for matching funds at all under state program?
There's no state program that provides funds for that. I know
well, under, under this bill, then we would be eligible for 50% or 60% maybe, huh?
That depending upon the design of the transfer station, there would well, there certainly be some, if not all, of those costs would be grant eligible.
Along that question, I was going to bring up Eagle River, that's had a real problem in that community, part of its land. But in the Matanuska Valley and in the Kenai Peninsula, and I'm sure other areas, been some real problems in the municipalities, boroughs or otherwise, to get into it. This would accommodate then sites that might not be located, say, in a city, but within the borough, for dumping landfill sites.
Well, sure. Any organized sure. municipality, it could be a borough, or a city. Or even a service district would be eligible for grant assistance, just as our current water and sewer program provides funding to cities or boroughs or service districts.
Another question. Our transfer facility out there is, I think, in the design stage right now. As long as they don't begin construction until after July 1, we'd be eligible for the funds.
Right. We ran into this problem in 1976, I believe it was, when the construction grant bond bill was changed. The formula was changed from 25% to 50%. And we felt at that time that it was necessary to put an effective date in there so that it precluded any little strange things happening along the way, where if the governor, for example, this bill passed the legislation late, but the governor signed it the end of the time period, some potential recipients of grants might just accidentally be left out of the process. Mm-hmm. We think for that reason that there's a definite effective date. It really doesn't make a difference. It could be immediate or it could be a definite date. The problem with it is, of course, there's no funds available, and there would have to be a fiscal note that would go along with the bill to provide funding before bond funds became available. We have a fiscal note, I think, in our package.
The fiscal note only speaks to
administrative costs.
I see.
There would have to be an appropriation then to provide the funding for the grants. If we had grants between the time the bill became effective and the time that money was available.
Do you have any idea of projects that are underway that might be waiting in the wings, more or less, for consideration of a bill like this?
From talking to Perry Lovett and other members of the Municipal League, and the testimonies reflects that too. So, look about appropriating $2.5 to $3 million between July 1st and the end of the year when bonds would be available.
In order to handle projects.
Otherwise, you'd have to wait until the bonds were sold before we could actually fund anything. The present bonds we have were passed by the voters specifically for water and sewer.
And are limited to the existing legislation. Mm-hmm. And are there other questions on this, Senator?
I've got a question on.
Fine. I'd like to go back, and perhaps we need to get Jenny Chitwood. The current thing that we have before us is just remains the same percentage of participation by the state. It adds the solid waste facilities, but it does allow a higher percentage, 60%, when you get into the resource recovery area. Is that correct?
That's the Municipal League proposal.
Okay. We need to, if Municipal League wants to speak to the additional, why I'd like to get you back to make
right.
comment on that particular thing. Senator Stimson, did you have any questions on this? Senator Kelly, why don't you explore your question with the information then on the back to 342.
Okay, my question on the bond package is, are these priorities in the back? What are the 25 million bonds are supposed to come to the state?
Actually, that was put in there just for additional information, but those are not the projects. That's a priority list of allocation of federal dollars available to the state.
Okay, where are the projects that the $25 million bond
okay.
are supposed to cover?
Those those we have no way of knowing what they're going to be, because the communities have not told us what they want to build in the next 2 years. So that's what I said. The only way we project our figures is looking at the past need and project the dollars forward. So we don't know what projects will be built in the next 2 years.
So the $25 million is just a guess figure?
It is an estimate based on past usage. If you will look in the capital budget there, you'll see about 16 pages of current projects that are presently underway from past bond programs. That using those for an obligation rate of about $1 million a month, we project our needs forward and add inflation to it.
Just again for clarification, because this is thrown where none of us or the committee members have had not had a lot of time with it, but you did make the comment that if we were to add past the new legislation that calls for bringing in the solid waste and has the 60% of for resource recovery projects, that we would need to add some $8 to $10 million to the $25 million package in order to accommodate again what your estimate is of projects that would come in. Is that correct?
That's correct. And also there would have to be some changes in the language of the bond issue to include solid waste in section one and section two.
That's correct.
We have an attorney general's opinion that restrains us very tightly on what we can use bond funds for. And if it says sewer and water, that means sewer and water.
Okay. So there would need to be a committee substitute in that area too, if this other legislation would be considered. Okay. All right. Are there questions by the committee members on either of these two approaches? I wonder if we might hear from Jenny Chitwood from the Municipal League on the league's position on that, and then I'd like to get some indication of how the committee feels on these two approaches.
Thank you. Jenny Chitwood, Alaska Municipal League. We sent out a bulletin Friday, and I've been amazed at the response that we've received already from, I'll just read off the ones that we've gotten responses from. Ketchikan, Skagway, Wrangell, Sitka, Palmer, Mat-Su Borough, Fairbanks, Kenai Peninsula Borough, Tenneke Springs, Cordova, and Houston. It shows you that there is a wide range of size and type of community interested in and feeling that water, sewer, solid waste are all very vital to their communities. The league is on record in support of raising the state share from 50 to 75% of water and sewer projects. This would bring the state share in line with what the federal share is of projects that have federal funding in them. Currently, sewer projects, and that's basically your interceptor and sewage treatment plants, have 75% federal funding, and then the remainder is split between the local and state. All other sewer systems, and then that's basically your collection systems in the subdivisions, are funded 50% state, 50% local, and the water systems are funded 50-50. So we have an example in Fairbanks where there is a similar size piece of property, and if it's on a system that has a federal share, its assessment is considerably less than the same type property that is on just a state local match. The calls that we got from Fairbanks said that they felt the raising it to 75 would be an equity situation, so that it would give relief to the property owners on systems that do not now have federal participation in them. We had some examples from Wrangell where the costs were just prohibitive for them to even consider doing things that need to be done, like a water tower that's will cost approximately $100,000, and the property owners in that area just feel that they can't afford a 50-50 match but it's a necessary thing, and they may be able to afford it if the state participated 75%. They have a water main that's leaking and causing a glacier area by a school. 160,000, they figure that that will cost. Those are just a couple of examples. Then the solid waste, the case for the solid waste has really already been made by Ernie Muller. A lot of the projects that municipalities are getting into now have been mandated by state and federal regulations. And there's a movement nationwide that costs that are mandated either by the federal government or the state government be either paid in full or partially paid by the entity mandating the cost. We weren't able to get too many accurate figures or cost projections on solid waste projects. A lot of the communities in Southeast are now, what projects they come up with will be dependent on an EPA study that's being done now, and that should be completed by the end of the summer. So at that time, we should have more accurate figures.
Have you gone ahead to make a projection if we would change the matching share on sewer and water to 75%? I assume that's just a straight projection. So, pardon me?
It would be 11 and a half million more.
11?
Half of the 23 million in addition.
And that's just taking the, on the sewer and water, it's not changing the resource recovery.
Right, and then 8 to 10 million.
I wonder if anything more on that, Jenny?
Well, I think that summarizes.
I wonder if we could have a department position on that. So far, we have the support for the cleanup language as far as sewer and water goes, the addition of the solid waste, and the change, I would assume, then in the bond issue, so that would be funded at some place between 8 and 10 million. Now we have one additional question to ask, and do you support the Municipal League position of the increase in the percentage of sewer and water from 50% to 75% state participation? And I'll direct that then to the commissioner if I could.
Senator, I talked to the governor about that, and as you know, the governor is not adverse to helping in local governments where we feel there is a real need, but we want to make sure that local government pays a fair share of the cost of these kinds of facilities. As Jenny went on, I see a question that I have not asked the governor, and that is, what about facilities that have no federal share, such as the collector sewer she was talking about? We really haven't discussed within ourselves whether the administration should support an increase in those kinds of projects from 50 to 75%. Off the top of my head, I would not, I think that could be supportable. We do have one problem and a host of others, and that is that on federal projects, we're talking about increasing the current federal-state joint share of the project from 87.5% to about 94%, which means that the local government share is going to be reduced from 12.5% to something less than 6%. And at that point, I think that the governor and I agree that the local government share is not sufficient to fulfill the governor's policy objective of a substantial amount of the cost being paid by the people who are benefiting from the project. The other problem we have is that the state and the federal government have limited control over how these projects are constructed. We have a certain amount of control. We want to make sure that they meet our substantive standards as to sizes of sewer lines, meet the electrical code, the fire code, and so on. But if somebody wants to put in a mosaic tile floor entryway into the sewage treatment plant, state and federal government is paying 94.5% as opposed to the local government paying substantial amount of share, we might find ourselves in a situation where it's very difficult to resist what might be unreasonable costs. I'm not sure we've done a good job of resisting unreasonable costs in the past. Without pointing any fingers or naming any names, I really wonder why we need two 50-foot high spun aluminum flagpoles in front of the Fairbanks sewage treatment plant that kind of dwarf the ones that are sitting out here in front of the building. If it was my decision, at some point in time, I'd say I'm not paying 87.5% for those flagpoles. I think that's the concern we have. We've relied and should rely logically on local government to control these costs, but if the share gets up into the 94-95% bracket, I think that commitment, that financial commitment local government has, may not be enough to provide those kinds of controls.
Commissioner, I think what we need you to do is to take a look at the issue that was raised by Mrs. Chitwood on those projects, the collector systems, that do not have federal matching share, to see what we're talking about in that area. And if we can separate that from those that do have the federal participation, maybe that's what we need to do.
Sure, I don't think we would have any problem with that.
Ms. Chitwood?
Yeah, I do want to clarify that. We certainly aren't asking for, we're asking for 75% on projects that do not have.
All right, well, that's what we need to pull out. Indicate we don't want to take any action today.
But
I think Senator Kelly.
I have a question about the federal share. Why, for example, would the feds not get involved in a project?
I think probably Ernie and Keith can answer it better than I do, but they just have in their regulations and in their law, they have certain things that they will fund, and they fund interceptors and sewage treatment plants, and they do not fund collection systems.
Commissioner, do you have some additional comment on that?
Well, you're right.
That's the answer.
You know, I sometimes get concerned that we're so anxious to spend the state money that we don't have any patience any longer waiting for federal funds. Obviously, this isn't one of those cases. If they simply don't fund the collective portions, you know. But I get somewhat frustrated down here when we're rushing Pell Mall to spend state dollars, when if we waited another year, we'd
right.
have federal funds. Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
Perhaps I should explain that the state has a large role to play in the allocation of the federal EPA Title II construction program funds. We, in cooperation with communities, select which projects will be funded, develop the priority list, help Russell Bucks out of Washington, and help work on individual projects. So it's not kind of a distant federal bureaucracy that's working on those particular projects. Virtually all the decisions are made by the state and local governments on these projects. But I think we've done a pretty good job of utilizing the federal money in that particular case. In some other cases, we hustle a little more, we might be able to get some more federal money.
Senator Rohde?
I'm in favor of the addition of solid waste, and there are a couple concerns I have. The first is one that the commissioner alluded to with regard to cost containment, if that's the proper word, and I think it is. I'm familiar with a number of instances, having been in the construction business, of the state receiving very poor value for its dollars. Presently, the way we have our system structured, there's no incentive in state government, essentially, for an individual or a supervisor or someone who is responsible for overseeing the public's money to really get involved to the degree that I would if I were the contractor or the owner. I can tell you there are situations, and one of them which came up during the summer was the Constable Pioneer's home. A classic case of the state not pursuing the remedies that it had where a contractor did a faulty job. I would have them in court or in the bank, or probably both, and resolve the matter, probably somewhat to their dissatisfaction, but certainly to the best interests of the citizens of the state. And the same concerns me when we are providing monies such as this, because it's a pass-through money to local government, and as the local share gets smaller, we have a control problem. And it's not the fault of local government, because I think one of the highest priorities we could have is water and sewer, some of the very basic, you know, ingredients in civilized society. On the other hand, I worry about the unwise expenditure of public monies, because we really have yet to develop a system that works very efficiently. In the aggregate, it works okay, but I don't think we get the same value for our dollar. And I hate to say it's built in.
All right, Commissioner, how do you work when, you know, the plans come in and they're reviewed? Isn't there a review for quality and a good job, as opposed to one that's got the you know, bronze flagpoles or whatever? What is the control mechanism there?
Keith could probably explain to you how this process works. I mean, he probably could help answer a lot of questions.
Is there any place I can tack this up? We could do it.
I'm poking holes in my brand new wall.
Keith is in the back door here, but we
this pretty much shows how the system works, and probably answer a lot of your questions.
Mm-hmm. We do plan review on the system.
Well, I think you're right. In the sense that I don't know how many projects we fund, over 200 active projects. We have a handful of engineers that are actually actively working with those projects. So we don't have the resources to directly supervise them, nor I think should we. The responsibility of local government.
I don't want to point the finger at you, because if we have a problem in the state, it's probably with DOT, who of course handles the bulk, you know, the bulk of our construction work. And the basic problem in human terms is the fact that there's no incentive for individuals working for the state to make a big fuss when someone lays down a couple thousand feet of asphalt for you, and it's not up to quality. Most people, when it's not their money and it's only a job, will sign off on it even though they know that it's going to buckle or it's substandard, rather than get into a prolonged fight with it. In some cases, you'll have a situation where it won't be regarded as acceptable, and you'll go on with the legal fight, and at some point the decision will be made, well, we'll just sign off on this, it's not worth the fight. If you and I we're in business together, and we might well decide that it's worth the fight because they're asking us to pay $750,000 for what is essentially an inferior product. And under contracting law and the contract itself, we could probably recoup a great deal of that. It's a basic problem, and perhaps this is not the most appropriate time to bring it up, but it's a significant problem whenever the state spends a great deal of money on construction. I've seen it happen time after time after time.
We're not without our problems in this business, too.
And I've been on the other end. I'm a federal attorney, and you know, watching how the federal government did it was illuminating, mm-hmm. but discouraging.
Keith, why don't you just take a kind of a fast run through of what happens from the authorization by the voters in the process that's followed?
We've got the $25.25 million we're projecting here as the bond fund. Assuming approved up here by the voters, we would start receiving grant applications from municipalities for water, sewer, and solid waste if it's added to it. We have no priorities established for the use of the state funds. The project initiated by the grantee at their discretion and their timing, so we have no way to anticipate when they're coming in. Our whole goal is to try to have adequate funds for a first-served basis when they come in with a grant. We determine that project eligibility along the regulations that we have adopted. We request the governor's authorization to award the grant, and the bond fund is reduced by some amount each time. That's requested by us, approved by budget management. The grant is awarded based, again, on the estimated costs that came in with the application. It's issued by us, accepted by the grantee, and about this time, plan and specifications start coming in. And this leads to Senator Rohde's question, where we do attempt to get some cost control here. Obviously, there's going to be some things that slip through, but we do try to cut out as much of the gold plate as we can on these things, just to come up with a functioning system. So
sometimes maybe we cut too much and we don't have a functioning system. But, I think our record has been pretty good on that, maybe better than some of the other departments.
But we do rely largely on the city's internal costs.
Right. I might add that the consultant that prepares these is under contract to the grantee. Under no time are we a party of the contract with them. We're strictly a granting agency and a regulatory agency as of approving the plans for compliance with state standards and good engineering practices. Okay, the project bid, notice to proceed, is all issued by the grantee. We approve the bid awards to low bidder or otherwise for good reason. The project is constructed, and during the construction, we do some on-site inspection probably 2 or 3 times during the length of a project. And sometimes done by force account. Also, the community has the option to do that. If it's a small project, they can choose to do it with their own city forces. During the construction payments start, we have a cash outlay from the bond sales at this point. The payments are based on a series of payments according to the percentage of completion on a project. Once it reaches 25% complete, we make a payment. When it hits 50%, we make another payment. Again, this is a, well, I should have added, at the time it's bid, we do often adjust the grant award since it was based on an estimate before. We can adjust this grant this time and return some funds back to the bond fund if necessary, so that they're not tied up. Or in some cases, times have to make a grant increase if the bid's come in higher than the estimate. Project is then completed. The city tells us complete. We do a final inspection. We have an auditor who goes out and audits the city's records to see if the what everything eligible has been claimed. And if there's any extra money that they haven't spent, it comes back to the bond fund and recycled to another grant obligation again and keeps going around. But you can see from this arrow and this arrow, there's quite a time gap, or there could be several years between the time a grant is awarded, or I should, and the time they actually start making payments. There's oftentimes a year or better in design and a lag during the construction phase. So I know this has come up in the past in other committee hearings. They're saying, you've still got money in your 76 bond fund that's still sitting there as cash. Right, we've got $16.5 million in our 76 bond fund. It's all obligated to a specific project, but the cash hasn't been paid due to the delay getting it out here. So that's a question that often comes up. Why do you need more money when you still got that much cash?
One question, Keith, in the committee's traveling to rural Alaska this summer, we saw a lot of projects that are really causing problems for the villages because of energy inefficiency or energy cost changes, let's put it that way. Where in the process do you take a look at, for instance, if you need heat loops in a system or whatever you might need that get into the energy picture, the efficiency of operation? Do you analyze that as a part of your review of the projects about what the end cost is going to be? And we've got the only situation in our community where estimates were made that it's going to cost $25 a month for use of a sewer, and we're talking now on $60 and $70 a month, and it's a real problem.
You're actually speaking of Girdwood.
Mm-hmm.
That's hopefully that'll be changed for the whole Anchorage Bowl.
Well, no, but see, that it's the question was that the estimates were made at a certain basis, and you know the final resolution may throw it on the whole community. But the point is that the system was bought and since signed off on a very different reality than what the reality is now that it's constructed.
Just designed 5 years ago.
It was. That is a case of a pretty expensive plant for a few users, but in Girdwood. Anything we did look at would be done right here in plan and specification approval. We are sensitive to the needs for reducing energy requirements, but unfortunately, in most of the state, you're stuck with a diesel generator for power, and as long as you've got that, you're going to have high power needs. There's very few places wind power or geothermal would be practical. We do have a couple in our Village Safe Water program that operates on the same cycle here, where we
are paying 100% on those, but we work more closely with the grantee and the consultants on those, since we're essentially an extension of the municipal staff of those small push projects. And those we have been able to reduce operating costs considerably more than the ones where we're operating with the grantee taking the majority of the workload.
We've also looked at alternative energy in the village, save water projects, and have a wind generator at council, for example. We've had some problems with the wind generator, but now it seems to be working.
Very good. Are there other questions of anyone that's participated? Would be my intention then to bring these back to you on Thursday. What we'll do is to work with the department to come up with the difference of those projects that are federally funded, least to be the ones that are not, so we can separate that out. We'll present the change to add the solid waste facilities, and then have a recommendation as to what the bond issue would be depending on our course of action. If you have any questions you'd like me to pursue, just let me know and we'll have that information for you.
Madam Chairman, one question I might have is the impact this would have on water supply in Anchorage.
All right, the impact on the water supply in Anchorage.
Yes, that's been a concern that the municipality has expressed to us, and I'm sure you're more familiar with it than other members of the committee. I've certainly had myself. And
are you talking about the possibilities of developing additional facilities? Is that?
Yes, it seems very clear from the communication that I've had that we will have a crisis situation down the road at some point, and that in all probability the municipality will look to the state for some assistance in that, and perhaps it might be appropriate to contact the city and ask them, or by whatever means. And I suspect the commissioner is relatively familiar with the problem as well, because it will be a more significant problem.
If it gets real bad in Anchorage, you might have to have year-round sessions in Juneau.
Fine. Do you have any...
water goes out in Juneau, what's for?
Do you have any just off-the-top remarks,
my
Commissioner?
My understanding on that is that the municipality is still conducting studies to determine what the best options are. There was the municipal metropolitan area urban study that the Corps of Engineers did and came up with a series of recommendations. The city is not, the municipality is not sure that, my understanding, they're going to agree with that.
I note there were proposals for test wells in Anchorage in the material.
Right. In fact, we've funded some test wells in the Eagle River area through the special appropriation the legislature provided, and have worked with the Corps and the city and the municipality in developing.
Ernie, those Eagle River wells didn't pan out, did they?
No, they didn't.
We do have several projects currently underway in Anchorage for water development. There's several wells that we're putting in at the present time under grants, and also the additional intake line to the water treatment plant from the dam. So that would expand the capacity there also. The plan I got across the military reservation at easements. That should help some.
So they are going to need some new source development and probably some kind of storage here in the next 10 years.
Senator Kelly.
Which dam is that?
It's on the military reservation. It's
a Ship Creek. There's been a major project there to create a storage reservoirs, and they've done a lot systematically to increase the capacity. But we're soon, like you say, going to reach the point where there has to be a major change, that the recharge area won't do it, and we're looking at Eagle River or some other area. They include some major solution.
My understanding is we need 5 years of lead time on that also.
Takes
approximately.
And a lot of
Senator?
Money.
And a lot of money.
He couldn't have got that land.
Is that right? We'll get some more information and come back, and if you have any questions that arise in between, why, make those known, and hopefully we can take some action on Thursday. And anything else to come before the committee? Committee meeting adjourned.
Ernie Mankins is SCP.